Chapter 15. World's Parliament of Religions. I was opposed to having my numerous students take part in this World's Fair. I cannot see that it is a fit opportunity to test the heart of Christianity. Mary Baker Eddy, 1893. In June of 1891, the following notice had been sent round the world. Believing that God is, and that he has not left himself without witnesses, believing that the influence of religion tends to advance the general welfare and is the most vital force in the social order of every people, and convinced that of a truth God is no respecter of persons, but that in every nation he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted of him, we affectionately invite the representatives of all faiths to aid us in presenting to the world, at the Exposition of 1893, the religious harmonies and unities of humanity, and also in showing forth the moral and spiritual agencies which are at the root of human progress. Mrs. Eddy was not interested in the harmonies of humanity. Her mission was not the humanizing, but the spiritualizing of consciousness. Neither was she interested in all religions. She knew that Christianity was the hope of the world. Many years had passed since she had seen that moral science, or the science of man, must be Christian science. Now her every effort and her every moment were devoted to the founding upon this planet of the science of Christianity, which was destined to break Earth's stupid rest. This was her great mission. Her students did not have her broad viewpoint. Even though she often signed her letters, "The Mother in Israel," they did not comprehend the meaning nor the import of those words. Consequently, they hailed with joy the invitation to participate in the Religious Congress of 1893. One young man, who was an active Christian Scientist at that time, wrote, "No event in the year 1893 loomed so large in the thoughts of Christian Scientists in America as the announcement that they would have a place in the World's Parliament of Religions, to be held at the World's Fair in Chicago. The doctrines of Christian Science were at last to be recognized and placed on an even footing with all others, and the announcement of this fact brought joy, hope, and enthusiasm to all." Mrs. Eddy's message in the April Journal regarding the fair, which is, quote, "I have no desire to see or to hear what is offered upon this approaching occasion," end quote, etc., had been lost on the students, so she would walk with them in the direction they were going. She appointed her very capable student, Edward A. Kimball of Chicago, to take charge of the arrangements in his city, and his ability, both metaphysical and executive, was made manifest. At a later date, Mr. Kimball said, "I once applied to the officers of the World's Fair for space in which to exhibit the publications of our society. They at first declined, thinking that the subject was not of sufficient importance. In the course of conversation, I said, if it could be authentically established that one single case of cancer had been cured by a physician using material remedies, you would be willing to grant space on which to erect a monument to that man, a mile high. And yet the Christian scientists, who have healed hundreds of cancers, are obliged to entreat you for a place in which to exhibit the books that show how it is done. In the course of time, they provided ample space for us and did more than we asked. The report, which appeared in the journal the following November, read, "We understand that ours was the only denomination which was accorded the privilege of holding a denominational meeting or congress, and also of presenting an address to the General Parliament setting forth its doctrinal points." Christian scientists were delighted with the proposed meetings, and also with the plans for their exhibit of books and literature, which exhibit would include the paintings of Pleasant View that James Gilman had done the previous December. A dozen prominent Christian scientists prepared speeches to be delivered at the denominational congress to an audience that would be mostly, if not entirely, Christian scientists. But the address to be delivered to the General Assembly of all religions was something else. The work that went into it can be seen in the following letter, sent to William B. Johnson on the 31st of July. "Beloved student, I desire you to select the very best comprehensive quotations to be found in all my works, which are applied to and elucidate the subject specified, naming book and page, although these will not go into the compilation, and send your compilation to Judge Hannah, 62 Boylston Street, Boston, as soon as possible. Be careful to quote no passages that assail the religious beliefs of any sect. I have selected 9 students to do the same, with the subject assigned to each one of them. He will arrange them properly for the presentation of Christian Science at the World's Fair Congress. This is the only presentation of Christian Science that I sanction for this Parliament. My reasons for this are that what is written is written. The texts are contained in these works, and I, for one, would not venture to depart from the fundamental teachings of these books with all the labor bestowed on them. I think that nothing can be said that would be more satisfactory on the subject which I have given out to define Christian Science in the manner aforesaid. Affectionately yours, Mary B. G. Eddy." Note well, the definitions need to be brief and selected with great care by comparing them with others throughout my works which relate to your subject. If your quotations are not just what are required to present the best aspect of Christian Science, it may prevent the representation of this subject at the World's Fair, as the time is limited. Say nothing of this arrangement till the event is over. M.B.G.E. Charles Carroll Bonney had done much to originate and promote the Congress and to make it a success. As president, he said in his address of welcome on opening day, "This day the sun of a new era of religious peace and progress rises over the world, dispelling the dark clouds of sectarian strife. This day a new flower blooms in the gardens of religious thought, filling the air with its exquisite perfume. This day, a new fraternity is born into the world of human progress to aid in the upbuilding of the kingdom of God in the hearts of men. Era and flower and fraternity bear one name. It is a name that will gladden the hearts of those who worship God and love man in every clime. Those who hear its music joyfully echo it back to sun and flower. It is the brotherhood of religions. In this name, I welcome the first Parliament of Religions to the world. Christian Scientists were thrilled with this attitude of brotherly love in a world that had been so hostile toward them. President Bonney and the chairman of the General Committee, Reverend John Henry Barrows, did all in their power to implement these ideals, but not all hearts were so touched. The next day of import for the Christian Scientists was the day of their denominational meeting at Washington Hall. President Bonney gave them a warm, welcoming address, part of which has been immortalized in miscellaneous writings. The general program, prepared under the auspices of the Parliament, read as follows. General Program, Hall of Washington, Wednesday, September 20th, 1893, from 2 to 6 p.m. Reading from Scriptures and from Science and Health, the textbook of Christian Science, written by Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy. Silent Prayer and the Lord's Prayer. Address by the President of the National Christian Scientist Association, Dr. E. J. Foster Eddy. Papers will be read on the following subjects. The Resurrection by Reverend D. A. Easton, Pastor, First Church of Christ Scientist, Boston. The Trinity by Reverend Augusta E. Stetson, Pastor, Church of Christ Scientist, New York. Spirit and Matter by Mrs. Ruth B. Ewing, Pastor, First Church of Christ Scientist, Chicago. God Incorporeal by General Erastus N. Bates, Pastor, Church of Christ Scientist, Cleveland. Immortals and Mortals by Mrs. A. M. Knott, Pastor, Church of Christ Scientist, Detroit. Scientific Theology by Reverend John Freeman Linscott, Pastor, Church of Christ Scientist, Chicago. Prophetic Scriptures by Edward P. Bates, Syracuse. Healing the Sick by Reverend E. M. Buswell, Pastor, Church of Christ Scientist, Beatrice, Nebraska. The Scientific Universe by Reverend Isabella M. Stewart, Pastor, Church of Christ Scientist, Toronto. The Brotherhood of Man by Alfred Farlow, Pastor, Mission Church of Christ Scientist, Kansas City. Mind, Not Matter by S. J. Hanna, Editor, Christian Science Journal. With one exception, these speeches were delivered as programmed. This exception was Mrs. Stetson's paper, An Allegory, by Mary Baker Eddy, Miscellaneous Writings 323, had first been published in the Christian Science Journal of April 1884. It appeared revised in the journal for September 1886, and now revised once more, Mrs. Eddy had Mrs. Stetson read it at the Parliament of Religions, and also had it republished as the leader in the upcoming journal for October 1893. An item of utmost importance was appended to this Christian Science Congress on the 20th of September. Conditions for the management and publication of the journal needed to be specified and established to free it from human domination. And Mrs. Eddy accomplished this in a novel way. As reported in the November Journal, the procedure was as follows. At the close of the Christian Science Congress, in connection with the World's Parliament of Religions, held Wednesday, September 20th, the following business was transacted. Dr. E. J. Foster Eddy read the following communication. Quote, "To the National Christian Scientists Association, I recommend that this meeting be considered as the adjourned meeting of the National Christian Scientist Association, and that this body shall adjourn to meet again in 3 years from this date. Signed, Mary B.G. Eddy." End quote. Quote, "My dear students, I have a unique request to lay before the National Christian Scientist Association. It is this: will you decide by vote whether or not I already am the owner of the Christian Science Journal, which seems to have fallen into my hands by reason of your prior vote to disorganize this association? But however this may be, I see the wisdom of again owning this Christian Science waif. Therefore, I respectfully suggest to this honorable body the importance of voting on this question. Affectionately yours, Mary B.G. Eddy." End quote. It was moved, seconded, and unanimously carried that the meeting be considered as the adjourned meeting of the National Christian Scientist Association, and that the body should adjourn to meet again in 3 years from this date. It was also moved, seconded, and unanimously carried that it be declared by this Association of Christian Scientists to be its understanding that the Christian Science Journal is now owned by Reverend Mary B.G. Eddy, its donor and original proprietor. There was then read an instrument signed by Mary B.G. Eddy, in which she redonated to this association the Christian Science Journal. It was moved, seconded, and unanimously carried that the offer be accepted with gratitude and thanks, subject to all the conditions contained therein. Moved and carried that a business and publication committee consisting of Mr. E. P. Bates, Mr. J. Armstrong, and Mr. Eugene Green be appointed to act in a business capacity for this association. Moved and carried that the President be empowered to appoint a committee to draft a telegram to send to our beloved leader, the Reverend Mary B.G. Eddy, tonight. The chair appointed Mr. Kimball, General Bates, and Judge Hanna to form said committee. The meeting then adjourned. William B. Johnson, Secretary. The Chicago Inter-Ocean newspaper reported on Thursday, "One of the best congresses yet held in connection with the Parliament of Religions, judged by numbers and interest, was that of the Christian Scientists, which took place yesterday afternoon in Washington Hall. For 2 hours before the hall opened, crowds besieged the doors, eager to gain admission. At 2 o'clock, the time set for opening the proceedings, the house was filled to the roof, no seats being available for love or money. The delegates came from all parts of the country. Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy, the founder of the organization, chose not to be present, but her devoted disciples were there, and the large audience sat through a program that lasted to 7 o'clock in the evening without showing signs of weariness. Press releases in general were favorable, and the scientists were well satisfied. A feeling of acceptance, accomplishment, and joy prevailed. But the great moment was yet to come, as reported in the journal. Of course, the meeting in the Hall of Washington was but a means to an end. It was only preliminary to the presentation of our leader's address before the General Parliament. To accomplish this was the central purpose of the entire movement. Mrs. Eddy had worked to guide all of the speakers in their preparation, but doubly so with Judge Hanna in the preparation of her manuscript, which she was to read before the General Assembly of the Parliament. During its preparation, she had written to Mrs. Hanna about the incredible difficulties she was encountering in compiling this address for Vanity Fair. She warned Judge Hanna that she felt that theologians would endeavor to crowd Christian Science out at the last moment. She also gave him a solemn charge to let no one see her manuscript, and that it was not to pass out of his hands until he delivered it to Mr. Kimball for inclusion in the World's Fair book. Friday morning, September 22nd, was the great day. In the eyes of Christian Scientists, prophecy was about to be fulfilled. For the first time in the history of the world, the gospel was to be preached to all nations. Columbus Hall had a seating capacity of 3,000 and with standing room 4,000. Before the program began, all standing room was exhausted, and many hundreds were turned away. On the stage sat representatives of the world's religions, Roman Catholics, Protestants, Greeks, Trinitarians, Unitarians, Theosophists, Buddhists, Shintoists, Zoroastrians, Jews, Mohammedans, and others, plus Judge Hanna. The morning program consisted of the following addresses: Religion and Wealth by Reverend Dr. Washington Gladden, Christianity and the Hawaiian Islands by Reverend E. P. Baker, What the Bible Has Wrought by Reverend Joseph Cook, Crime and Its Remedy by Reverend Olympia Brown, Unity and Christian Science by Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy, read by Septimus J. Hanna, The Religion of the North American Indians by Miss Fletcher, Professor of Ethnology, Harvard University. Judge Hanna was presented to the audience by Reverend Dr. Burroughs in these words: To the Christian Scientists, this Parliament is greatly indebted for the interest they have manifested in its success. the large attendance at their Congress the other day, and the enthusiasm which prevailed together with their large numbers in this hall today, testify to their earnestness and zeal, and are among the pleasant and helpful features of these assemblages. I am glad to give them fraternal greeting and welcome here today. Sad to say, all of the Christian ministers present did not share Reverend Barrow's kindly attitude. Reverend Joseph Cook, who sat on the platform, was the same popular lecturer and speaker from Boston who had grudgingly allowed Mrs. Eddy 10 minutes before his audience in Tremont Temple 8 years earlier, in March of 1885, and who had treated her so rudely and unkindly on that occasion. His attitude toward Christian Science had not softened, and what Mrs. Eddy had foreseen came close to fulfillment. Clara Shannon, who sat in the audience, wrote at a later date. Judge Septimus J. Hanna read an article which had been written by our dear leader, and on the platform were clergymen of other denominations. Several times during the reading of Reverend Joseph Cook, who attacked Mrs. Eddy in Tremont Temple, tried to stop Judge Hanna, saying that he was overstaying his time. But Judge Hanna continued reading until the end of what our leader had written. While listening to him, I thought, God bless him. His Christianity and dignity were impressive. Judge Hanna mentioned that he would find this teaching in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. At that moment, Mr. Cook stood up and held up the Bible, saying he hoped the Bible would be his dying pillow. Thousands of scientists were there, listening eagerly, not wishing to lose one of the words of our leader. The hall, which held many thousands, was filled and people were standing. It was a joyful and successful meeting, in spite of all Mr. Cook's interruptions. Many favorable newspaper reports followed this meeting. Saturday's Chicago Tribune stated, "The crowd in the hall of Columbus yesterday morning was greater than at any time since the Parliament first opened. It was apparently the announcement that the cause of Christian Science would be presented, which attracted them." Christian scientists were jubilant. Their exhibit of literature, in which a lovely crayon portrait of Mrs. Eddy occupied a conspicuous place as its chief adornment, had proved very attractive. The demand for copies of the Christian Science Journal had grown from 100 per day to as high as 800 on some days. In Mr. Kimball's words, quote, "The world has already entered upon an era of intellectual and spiritual advancement, which was prophetically indicated in the motto adopted by the World's Columbian Exposition, mind, not matter," end quote. Mrs. Eddy, together with all Christian scientists, could not but be pleased by the fact that the form of silent prayer, followed by repeating the Lord's Prayer, established first by our leader many years ago, was adopted by the religious parliament. But best of all was the wonderful reception of Mrs. Eddy's address, read so capably by Judge Hanna and highly praised by fair officials. Letters and telegrams bearing the joyous news poured into Pleasant View. Mrs. Eddy rejoiced at the happy messages and flew a white banner from the balcony of Pleasant View the next day in celebration of the triumph. That Saturday morning, the 23rd of September, James Gilman and Mr. W. W. Brown, the photographer, were on the grounds to take some pictures of the outside of Pleasant View. Gilman was totally absorbed in his work and his art, and completely unaware that there was any significance to the white banner. As a result, he greatly distressed Mrs. Eddy in his endeavors to rearrange it. But as it turned out, this ignorant assault upon her banner was the prelude to further distressing news from Chicago. Judge Hanna had not been faithful to the solemn charge that his leader had placed upon him. Persecution is easier to withstand than is popularity. The atmosphere of triumph and jubilation had been so great that the scientists had all been swept off their feet. The acclaim of the press had disarmed them, but in the joy of the moment, they were unaware of it. Hanna had no idea the effect his letter of September 24th would have on Mrs. Eddy. "Your prophecy that the theologians would try to crowd us out at the last minute was literally fulfilled. They did try, but failed. The demonstration on the whole was a grand one. We had to meet this alternative. Your address must go into the newspapers. Their reporters were there with instructions to report. We must either rely on their garbled work or give them copies. The doctor, Mr. K, and myself concluded it was best to give them copies, which we did in full. The students rarely understood the footsteps that Mrs. Eddy's spiritual leadership required of her, and her reaction to this news left them in a state of bewilderment. She reminded Hanna of his solemn charge with her manuscript and her instruction that when he delivered it to Mr. Kimball, he should promise you to let no one see it until it was printed in the World's Fair book. To Mr. Kimball, she wrote, quote, "God has compelled me at last to do as he seemed to say plainly at first, but I was turned aside," end quote. She knew that it was Christians who must first accept the message of Christian Science before the world would ever find salvation. Her mission was not to the world, but to Christianity, the lost sheep of the house of Israel, to the Christians who were asleep to their own identity. With Jesus, she could say, quote, "I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel," end quote. Her message was God-directed and was not to be scattered abroad. And now, as graciously as possible, she must say this to the officials in charge of the world's parliament of religions. To Mr. Kimball, she delegated the responsibility for reading her missives and passing them on to Mr. Bonney and Reverend Burroughs. To Burroughs, who was to edit the history of the Parliament, she said, "I am most grateful to you for the Christian charity and liberal sentiments you manifest to all religions. I thank you especially for your honorable endeavors in behalf of Christian Science, and shall cherish this memory in my heart of hearts. But I must decline to have my address, which Judge Hanna read before the Parliament of Religions, published in the World's Fair book, which is to contain these matters. I was opposed to having my numerous students take part in this World's Fair, but yielded to their views on this subject. I cannot see that it is a fit opportunity to test the heart of Christianity, but I may be mistaken. Kimball was completely confused. However, he did his best to understand the leader and to follow her instructions, and after further correspondence, gained her approval to allow an abridgment of her address to be included in the World's Fair book. But Hannah, contrary to his nature, was rebellious. He wrote Mrs. Eddy at great length that he felt she had acted in haste, that she was wrong, that the Parliament was a success for Christian Science. I believe the matter to have been God-appointed. I believe it to be fulfillment of prophecy. I believe it to have been a part of your great mission. I believe that for the first time in the world's history, the gospel was preached to all nations in a day. If one could have evidence that he was moved and protected by divine power, I had throughout this trying ordeal. If I may not so believe, I should be inclined to question whether there is a God who moves in human affairs, and to doubt the divinity of your mission. Always the leader, Mrs. Eddy, responded immediately to this written tirade by asking Hannah, quote, "Will you publish in your next issue an exact copy of your letter to me, and my reply as I shall write it?" End quote. If unwilling to do so, he could resign as editor of the journal. It took Hannah several days to digest this antidote, and they were days of anguish. In March of 1892, he had written to Mrs. Eddy, "Ever since I set aside false pride and made, so far as I know how, the complete surrender to truth, my pathway has been strewn with more flowers than it seems to me I deserve. The yoke has been relatively easy and the burden light. I have been, I believe, willing to carry the cross. Have I not yet truly taken it up? Or has it been in large part carried for me by another? Has the new interpretation of the Christ love, given through science and health, measurably lifted from our shoulders the cross-bearing burden? Can it be that this is sacrificing all for Christ? If so, it is the sacrifice of exchanging pebbles for pearls, dross for gold." In her response to this missive, the leader had said, quote, "You will find the cross is light and sometimes heavy. Both conditions are the weight we, not God, give it." End quote. Now his cross, which had been such a joy, seemed heavy indeed, and his path of flowers strewn with thorns. Nevertheless, Mrs. Eddy's challenging letter and his ensuing day of anguishing struggle did open his eyes to his own mistakes. He was able to write in humility, quote, "I did disobey your explicit orders. The trust was a sacred one, and it was violated," end quote. But neither he nor anyone else understood her reaction to what they felt was a great success. She had tried to dissuade the scientists from participating in the world's parliament of religions. And now, to her at least, the reason for God's leading away from this gathering was obvious. Once more, in her experience, she had come unto her own, and her own received her not. Kimball wrote in a letter, quote, "There is no doubt that the Christian ecclesiastics were a good deal agitated during the progress of the Parliament." End quote. Instead of Christianity's having been leavened by Christian Science, opposition from Protestantism and Catholicism was intensified. This message comes through in her many letters to students at that time. To Carolyn Noyes, "Stop all mental effort, or any kind, to get my address in the Parliament book. Since the newspapers devoured it, contrary to my solemn charge, God has shown me by signs and wonders that it must not be published at this date. The dose is too great. The chemicalization will do incalculable harm. This is evidently why God has always kept me from concentrating portions of my works and publishing them as students have so often begged me to do." To Edward A. Kimball, "You know not what you do. Since the newspapers took the heart of my works into their jaws, there has an evil come from it that threatens our cause with a blow worse than ever before fell it." The Ministerial League, growing out of the Religious Congress, whereby to strengthen their failing prospects, includes, among other things, prayers for the heretics. This combined mental force is, in belief, the one that to the religious mind brings more anguish and hopelessness and hatred of me than any power before let loose. I think if the address had been properly disposed of and not given to reporters, God would have shown me before the book went out just what to do. But now this published dose has unified parties against us in prayer. That is something my students do not yet know how to meet in its effects. This very situation was observed 80 years later in a Christian Science church in a rural area. In a period of only a few months, three healthy, unrelated men were elected to the position of first reader, and each died very suddenly of unknown causes. When it was suggested to the one practitioner in the small church that the opposition of other denominations in the area needed to be understood and met, her response was, quote, "Oh, don't mention that to anyone. It will frighten them," end quote. In a few words, Mrs. Eddy gave the remedy, quote, "It is materialism through which the animal magnetizer preys and becomes a prey. Spirituality is the basis of all true volition," end quote. The November Journal was devoted to reporting Christian Science activities at the World's Fair, including the students' speeches. But the import was contained in two short notices from Mrs. Eddy's pen. Notice: "My beloved Christian Scientists, please send in your contributions as usual to our journal. All is well at headquarters, and when the mist shall melt away, you will see clearly the glory of the heaven of love within your own hearts. Let this sign of peace and harmony be supreme and forever yours. I proposed to merge the adjourning meeting in the one held at Chicago simply because I see no advantage and great disadvantage in one student's opinions or modus operandi becoming the basis for others. Read retrospection on this subject. Science is absolute and best understood through the study of my works and a daily Christian demonstration. It is their materiality that clogs the student's progress. And, quote, this kind goeth not forth, but by prayer and fasting, end quote. It is materialism through which the animal magnetizer preys and becomes a prey. Spirituality is the basis of all true volition. Assembling themselves together and listening to each other amicably or contentiously, I have seen is no aid to the student in acquiring solid Christian science. Experience and above all, obedience are the tests of growth and understanding in science. Mary B. G. Eddy. The second notice read, take heed. I hereby enjoin all Christian scientists that hereafter they refrain from speaking or writing condemnatory of any Christian denomination and only promulgate Christian science through correct statement of the science of Christianity and by its good works. This alone is consistent with our attitude and the brotherly place according to us in the Congress and Parliament of Religions in A.D. 1893. Mary B. G. Eddy. The field in general felt, as had Hannah, that the Parliament of Religions was a fulfillment of prophecy and a tremendous triumph for Christian science. A few close to Mrs. Eddy got the message that she got and gave it to all. Quote, assembling themselves together and listening to each other amicably or contentiously, I have seen is no aid to the student in acquiring solid Christian science. End quote. Perhaps the entire affair is best summed up in one of her letters to a student. The World's Fair cost Christian scientists the threats and efforts of church and state that we now are facing. But the error will have its day unless we learn there is no error.